This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Equal Agenda podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Imi.
And I'm Roman.
And today we're going to be discussing women in sport. And we have a very special guest with us here today in the studio. Please give a warm welcome to Tash Wiglin.
Hey everyone, thanks for having me.
Sweet. So we're going to start off by discussing our historic figure of the week. And this week we have a female athlete. We have got Dame Yvette. So Yvette Williams was born in 1929 and was the first woman to represent New Zealand in the Olympics and win gold. So Williams won the gold medal in long jump at the 1952 Olympics in Helsinki. Her winning distance of 6.24 metres was the new Olympic record. Not only did she represent New Zealand in track and field for long jump, but she also represented Otago, the South Island, and New Zealand in basketball. So that's a historic figure for this week. It's no surprise that she is, as she paves the way for many New Zealand female athletes. All right, let's get straight into it. So, please, Tash, will you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're here today?
So I play cricket semi-professionally for the Northern Brave, which is the cricket team in the National League here in New Zealand. And I currently study at the University of Waikato doing a double major in economics and supply chain management. But yeah, I spend a lot of my time and my true passion playing cricket.
And am I correct in saying that you represent New Zealand in the under-19s cricket team?
Yes, I've been fortunate enough to go to two under-19 World Cups, and I was the captain at my most recent one. So.
Whoa, very impressive. So, that's a little bit about Tash. We're going to slide into the episode by talking a little bit briefly about the history of sport and gender in sport and how they kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, so I guess the earliest big sporting event that most people know is the Olympic Games. Initially, it was supposed to be a male-only event. And in certain cases, in certain places, it was actually illegal for women to not only participate, but to attend and watch the games, sometimes under penalty of death. Eventually, though, in ancient Greece, they decided to have like a separate sort of games for women. You had like smaller stadiums, you had less intensive events. It was mostly them just saying like, oh, I've got to scale it down for the woman because they're not as good as the men at sports, essentially. And that's sort of a thing that you see has been carried on in the Olympics is even the first modern Olympics, women were completely excluded.
Yeah, and there's a quote, sorry to interrupt you, but there's a quote that the modern Olympic Games founder, Pierre de Coubertin, felt that their participation would be inappropriate and no matter how toughened a sportswoman may be, her organism is not cut out to sustain certain shocks. Basically, the whole idea why women couldn't play or compete in the Olympics was because they were so fragile. There were these fragile little flowers that would break if they played sport. And the main concern was that they wouldn't be able to bear children if they got injured during sport.
Yeah, and it's been proven wrong time and again. And also just the fact that that also stems from a misunderstanding of women's health, of women's bodies. And like, again, they're assuming that, you know, all these shocks that sustained from sport, they're going to make a woman infertile and you're not going to be able to have kids anymore, which was based off of essentially complete speculation. More so just an excuse, I think, to exclude women.
Yeah. Tash, how would it make you feel if someone today said you can't play sport because it might prevent you from having children one day?
Honestly, you probably would just laugh. I don't know. I don't know if I'd think they're serious or not.
Yeah.
Be like, oh.
It's so ridiculous. Like, you wouldn't believe it today.
No, yeah. But it's like, it's part of a trend of, especially back in the day, but even still now, of reducing women to like essentially parts of their body or like their sexual usefulness or something like that. Like, you can't give birth to kids, so why would you want to do this? Even though it's completely false, but it's like that's the idea.
Yeah, like a woman's only worth is once again related back to her motherhood or her ability to bear children.
Hmm.
Which...
Yeah. In ancient China, though, at around the same time as the Greeks, they did have women that participated quite a lot in a really popular sport they had at the time, which was essentially like an ancient version of football. And women participated actually quite a lot in these sports. It was very common to see women play the sport, except, again, you would see them play in smaller facilities, so smaller fields, and they would have softer balls that they would play with because they didn't think that they could handle the standard hard balls that they played with.
Yeah, kind of relating it back to that, like, you can play sports, but you can't play the contact or more physical ones,
yeah,
would you say?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, they're more fragile.
Yeah.
Eventually, nothing much really changes, especially because, like, sports during the Middle Ages is not really, like, a super organized thing. It was mostly, like, for fitness that people would do. Like, you could still play sports for leisure, but people mostly did it to keep fit. And even when it started to become professional, women were only encouraged to do sports to keep fit and not actually to be competitive.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, getting another thing, focusing on women's bodies specifically.
Yeah, and it kind of tied into that whole, like, with the rise of sport being covered by the media, it was kind of still women's sport was only, and women's fitness was encouraged for women to keep a certain physique and look a certain way. It's like, hey, you need to go for a run, you need to go to the gym because you need to fit into this mold of female beauty standards.
Yeah, and I mean, the beauty standards at the time were pretty crazy in the first place, like eating tapeworms, putting on corsets, stuff like that. Just... during the French Revolution, though, they introduced, well, the revolutionaries, they introduced mandatory, what would you call it? Just like normal education plus physical education for girls and boys.
Mm.
And then Napoleon took power and sort of got rid of all of that and made it all about physical education for boys so that they could then get conscripted into the military.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a, I guess it would be, it makes sense because it's like a pretty military dictatorship this guy's got going. And the idea is reinforcing those gender norms where boys are doing all the sport, boys going into the military and women essentially just staying home.
Mm. I think it's quite interesting. This is all new information to me. Haven't really ever looked into the history of women in sport. Obviously in a place now though where like it is a career, so it's quite interesting to like, and this has only happened in the last 10-15 years,
yeah,
where it's a genuine career and opportunity for women. So it's pretty like just I can't imagine a world without like professional cricket in my world right now. So it's crazy to think that wasn't actually that long ago that it just none of this even existed really.
Yeah. And that must be so, like you say, so interesting for you because it's such a big part of your life. And I would imagine that you can't, like, see your life without it. And to kind of put yourself in these women's shoes in the past who maybe for them sport was everything, but they weren't allowed to compete and they weren't allowed to play, or they were told that they were less than or not as good as the men simply for being female. And we do still see it today, but again, like, it's definitely not to the same extent in New Zealand, at least. It's growing, but there's definitely still a lot of work that needs to be done, but it is still pretty jarring to look back on the history.
Like, and again, like, yeah, it's a very recent thing that you're actually able to make this a viable thing. But even then, because it is so new, there's still, like, pushback against it. There's still progress to be made. Like, there are drastic gaps between what like male athletes and female athletes earn still.
Yeah. Yeah, let's discuss that a bit more. So, Tash, if you don't mind, we'll ask you a couple questions just to kind of, because we both don't play professional sport or it's not our career, so we'd love to hear from you. I kind of just want to get like a whole vibe of like, what does sport mean to you personally? Like,
I guess it's something I thoroughly enjoy and sort of is like my purpose, my drive, you know, what I do to fill my time. I just absolutely love it, the competitive, the social aspect of it. But yeah, now for me, I'm looking at it being like a career option. And I think that's really cool.
That's incredible. Yeah. That's what an amazing like opportunity and how far we've come that you can turn something you're so passionate about into a career. And no doubt through so much hard work, I'm sure. But like, good on you. That's all I have to say.
I mean, yeah, I think that's really great that you're actually able to turn it into a career. But I think it's also, again, it's still startling how like how recently people have been able to do this. Again.
Yeah. Like, when men have been able to do it for so long, I think is the big thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And I think like the biggest difference recently is like obviously technology, people can watch it all over the world, but it's particularly women's cricket. The broadcasting, like it's just the past few years it's been on free-to-air TV here in New Zealand. So you just see ads, you see the game, you see women and females actually playing it on TV and like with the social media and actually getting it out there. And it's like if you see something regularly, it just becomes more normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like the more times you see something, the more normal it is. And I think that's sort of where the biggest change has been over these past few years, even for like women's rugby and everything. It's so much easier to view it and see it. So as a little girl, even just spectators, everyone watching the game, you see it more often. Just makes it more normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you say that when you were younger and growing up and like started playing cricket that you didn't really get to see a lot of that and now you're kind of seeing the growth?
Yeah, like my first ever game that I went to live was like the Black Caps and All Blacks. And if you'd asked me about the White Ferns or the women's Black Ferns, I would have been like, sort of like, who?
Yeah.
But, you know, with... It's now the White Ferns have won a World Cup. The Black Ferns also won a World Cup. You turn the TV on in winter and it's like women's rugby.
Yeah.
Turn the TV on in summer, there's women's cricket. And it's just something that I never really saw growing up. But now it's quite easy to find.
Yeah.
Not even find, it's just there for us.
Yeah, that's so cool. I totally agree. And because I'm kind of, I don't really get fed that same sports stuff from my algorithm, but I'm definitely seeing an increase in women's basketball on my feed because I remember growing up I was the same, like I'll just go to the tall blacks games, but now I'm getting fed so much more about women's professional basketball and in particular the WNBA. I feel like that has risen so much. Like I know it's in the States, but it is such a big institution and it's like growing so much, which is very impressive and cool to watch as like a girl who's grown up liking sports. I'm sure the same for you, Tash.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess for me, yeah, because I still see the same thing on my social media. I think for me it's mostly women's hockey. But like just the fact that you can stream things to gigantic audiences worldwide and you're able to, it's a lot easier to sort of get audiences, retain them and raise funds and stuff, because I know a lot of major women's sports events are either underfunded or like they're not seen as profitable.
Yeah.
Which is like sort of raised as a big issue, but it's because they're so neglected in media and neglected by sponsors.
I think a big misconception is kind of the idea that people don't want to watch women's sports, and I would just say that that is completely untrue. I think people from like the start of like sports, like people have always wanted to watch women's sports, but they just have, it has not been an option. So it's really cool to see these options being put out there. And with that, like you said, Tash, it's just getting more normalized. Like I personally don't keep up with the NBA, the men's NBA, but I'm all over the WNBA. Like I could name WNBA players, but I don't think I could name that many NBA players actually. And I think that that's, I honestly think that's pretty cool. Like, I don't know. People might be a bit like, whoa, but to me, that's the women's game is far more interesting for me.
For me, like personally, I've never really understood not wanting to watch one or the other, because it's like it's sports, the idea is the competition and it's like being able to see the different athletes and their abilities and what they can do, and I don't think it would make a difference if it was man or woman playing, because again it's the sport, it's about watching the sport, it's about watching the competition.
Yeah. I'd agree and disagree with you there, because I think that there's definitely different style. It depends on the sport, 100%. Yeah. There's definitely different styles of play within the gender of sports, because if you look at lacrosse, for example, the men's game is a completely different game to the women's. Like, they have different rules. They have different, like, strategies completely. Like, one is a contact sport and one is not. And I wonder, Tash, are there any major differences between, like, men's and women's crickets? Cricket?
For the rules, there's only a few basic technical changes. Like, in T20 cricket, the men get 5 boundary fielders out and we get 4 boundary fielders out. But at the end of the day, like, the main rules are the same, and I sort of agree with what Roman just said about, like, it doesn't matter who's playing. I really enjoy the contest and the game. Like, I don't enjoy watching all sports, but the ones I do, it's just, like, I just love the game. But, like, as we said earlier, like, men and women, like, we actually aren't the same, so we have different strengths and different skills. And if I turn up to a men's game of sport and expect it to look the same as when I play, I'll probably be disappointed.
Yeah.
Whereas if, and vice versa, if you turn up to a woman's, like, cricket game and expect to see 145-kilometre bowling, you're going to be disappointed. But if you turn up and, like, understand and appreciate that, it's a whole different skill set.
Yeah.
And even though it's the same rules, it is actually played differently.
Yes.
And so you, like, if you go there with that mindset and you just only care about the contest and the sport and you can appreciate the level of skill that these athletes are putting on display, like, the experience will be much greater. And I think that's, we're getting to that position a lot more these days as it's more normalised on TV. You understand that it's, is different games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. 100% I agree. I guess I have a little bit of a question that is kind of just from a point of, like, when I was growing up and playing basketball when I was younger, I would always hear stuff like, oh, like, you play really well for a girl, or like, oh, you play in this team, okay, 1v1 me then. It's like they always have to contest your achievements as a female. And even recently I had someone tell me, like, literally when they found out that I played basketball, like, I'm not claiming to be a professional athlete at all, I am completely social, like, it's for fun. But they came up to me and they were like, well, have you ever represented New Zealand in a team? And I was like, no, I haven't. But that would be a really cool achievement for someone who has. They're like, well, you can't claim to be an athlete then if you haven't represented New Zealand. And I was like, sorry? Like, I never claimed to be an international athlete or anything, but anyone can be an athlete. Like, if you're playing a sport, then, like, I would say that you're an athlete. And it's... And it was a man that was saying this to me, and it genuinely felt like you would not say that to one of your guy friends, so why are you saying it to me? And I just wanted to ask you, Tash, if you've faced any kind of misconceptions or, like, awkward interactions when people find out that you're a professional athlete?
I'd just say, like, mostly, like, when I'm little, when I was playing with the boys and I walk out to bat and they bring the field in. Because they think I can't hit it very far. And then, you know, you just hit it over their heads. And sort of when you're, like, growing up, like, you just have to earn that respect. But, like, I'm sort of in a place now where I haven't come across that too many times. Or if I have, I don't really remember it because I'm just like, oh, that's, like, normal. They just think that of me. And I've just, like, done it as a passing comment, which, like, is actually bad. Like, I shouldn't do that. But, you know...
No, I totally get what you mean. And that's really cool that you're at a point in your career where you're stable enough and comfortable enough in your skill that you know that they're only saying stuff like that because them themselves are insecure about their abilities. And that is so, like, true about, like, them, like, taking a step in because they don't think that they can hit it as hard. And if anything, it's more like fuel to the fire. It's more motivation, like, I'm gonna hit it further. But I still don't think it's a good thing for them to be doing that because it's like women are just always having to take this extra step to be seen on the same playing field when it comes to sports, I would say. Mm-hmm. The final kind of thing I want to ask you before we go on to some more current issues or positives that we're seeing in women in sport, have you experienced less, like, opportunities or faced fewer funding or resources than your, like, male counterparts?
The most obvious one is sponsorships.
Yeah.
Everyone out there thinks that only the men's game gets viewership. And so, like, I know a club, men's club cricket team, and they're all, like, fully sponsored. And I'm 50% sponsored, and that's currently, like, I'm very, very grateful. Currently the best I can do, though. But they're just so much more willing to pass out sponsorships and funding just to the... Well, not just to the men's game, because it's obviously important to keep growing, but it's definitely not at the same level in terms of those sorts of opportunities out there at the moment.
It sucks because it's not even, like, particularly true. I feel like... I think it sort of goes hand in hand because I think people would want to watch, like, women's sports. I think that's a given. But then just because of these assumptions, they get so... critically underfunded, and then it, like, what's it, it makes it less likely for people to view because they're not sponsored, so then they don't get the opportunity to actually, like, get out there.
Yeah, like a little bit of a cycle. I would also kind of say that a lot of people might view, like, sponsoring a women's sports team or, like, a female athlete, they might view it as, like, risky or like a little bit of like taking a chance almost, which I don't think is fair or accurate.
Like they feel less likely that they're going to get a profit or a return because it's people don't watch women's sport and they don't idolise women, so they don't want to be like Emmy, they want to be like Bolden Barrett.
Exactly.
Like, you know?
Exactly. And that just, I would say that that just comes with, you know, the history of like men being being presented as like the athletes and the heroes and kind of stuff. And I hope, personally, I hope that with time we will see way more, like, women as the face of sports.
Yeah, I mean, like, with what you said, there's an element especially of, like, the culture of it in New Zealand just because of, like, the way that sports is culturally here and also media representations. Like, the All Blacks men's team has become, like an icon for the country. It's like a really deep part of the country's like cultural identity.
Yes.
And it's that it is, it's accompanied by that kind of masculinity and the association with the masculine.
Yeah. I would say, I think it's also kind of a little bit unfair that it's almost on the viewer to go searching for like female sports, like in a way, like I don't genuinely know if like my feed is showing me more women's sports because that's what I personally have like curated it to be, or if it genuinely has been getting pushed out there more because of like my degree and what I'm passionate about, like gender equality and stuff. I don't know if I'm just seeing it more because that's what I'm engaging with more, or if everyone is kind of seeing it more. I would hope that like everyone is kind of viewing it more. But I would also say that if you are a lover of sports and maybe you do tend to only watch male sports, I would encourage you to go and like make an active effort to watch some women's sports if you're into sports and stuff. Yeah, I'd really encourage you to. And definitely female cricket, Ata.
Yeah, support the Northern Brave.
Definitely. I'll just say a few positives, though, because we have kind of, we have been talking about some positives and some negatives, but in terms of, like, currently, there's definitely some statistics that show that women's sport is growing and continues to grow. So NZ Herald reported an extra 450,000 Kiwis watched women's sport in the past year, which was a 29% jump in viewership, which is pretty cool.
It's a lot.
And then Sport NZ says that women's sport coverage in New Zealand media has grown from 15% in 2020 to 27% in 2024, which is a big jump, but it's still not quite equal. Yeah.
That Sport NZ thing actually reminds me of another issue that's quite relevant to women's sports at the moment. So trans athletes participating... there was a thing recently in New Zealand with Sport New Zealand, Sport NZ, where they were forced to take down their guidelines for sort of the inclusion of trans and gender non-conforming athletes. And this was just for like local clubs and stuff like that, where it was they were giving guidelines on how you can properly include people by balancing like fairness and everything like that. And the government just sort of told them to take it down.
What?
For no particular reason, because if anything, that's like helpful and it's informed by experts, by people who actually know what they're doing in the field. And that was just completely removed.
That's terrible. And I think that you're so right, Roman. There's a big kind of debate right now about like trans athletes, particularly like trans women, are hurting the like female sports scene. And I would completely disagree, because if anything, our whole discussion today, not one time have we mentioned that, oh, a big threat to women's sports is trans athletes. No, the things that we've discussed is funding opportunities, sponsorships, like lack of viewership.
Yeah.
And I would just personally, I would say that trans athletes are not the biggest threat to women's sports.
And they've done, because they've done studies on it, the effects of going through like hormone therapy. It does change your body significantly, and you do have there was a particular study that it was quite a small sample size. It was around 69 people, but it still showed that trans women, I think it was volleyball players, had lower biomarkers than cis men who played the same sport, and they were actually comparable to cis women.
Yeah.
So not only are they not a gigantic threat, it's usually quite overblown. A lot of the people that are so up in arms about issues like this typically aren't really too interested in the sports themselves that they play.
They're just using sports as a kind of scapegoat to...
As a political thing,
to talk about, to be transphobic, basically.
Like the Olympic Committee recently, as of 2026, they're banning trans and gender non-conforming athletes, so like intersex people as well.
That's crazy, because...
Yeah, I mean,
that's like what we discussed earlier, how women weren't allowed to play because supposedly they're seen as more weak because of their biology. Just that was just not true, just like this is. It's like,
it's based on false politically motivated assumptions.
You're going back in time, basically. And what would you say about that, Tash?
I think that's a really good way to put it. For that those specific athletes, it is like... They may as well have been women like 80 years ago. And if we just look at the history of how women's sport has evolved, like why do we need to start with a backward step for all those athletes when sport should just be available for all to play and compete in?
Exactly. All right, team, that's pretty much all we have time for today. Thank you again to Tash for being our beautiful guest. And
follow the New Zealand Women's A team who are touring Sri Lanka. It's an exciting opportunity, another development of women's sport. So I'm pretty excited to be a part of that. And yeah.
Awesome. Get amongst it. Watch some women's cricket if you can. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next week.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.